If you were to ask the average African American a student that wants to do research, what type of research do you want to do? Most of them are going to say health disparities, health equity work, because that means something to us. So you know, we all understand that, you know, for the most part, when we go out and achieve these degrees and get in position to do research, we're going to give back to the community.
Presenting Danforth Dialogues, a monthly podcast on leadership hosted by Morehouse School of Medicine President and CEO, Dr. Valerie Montgomery Rice. This month, we are focusing on the extensive research program at Morehouse School of Medicine. Dr. Montgomery Rice is being joined by Dr. Sandra Harris Hooker, Morehouse School of Medicine Senior Vice President for External Affairs and Innovation, and Dr. Rick Kittles, Morehouse School of Medicine Senior Vice President for Research, to discuss the medical school's research efforts. Now, for this month's podcast, here is Dr. Valerie Montgomery Rice.
Welcome to Danforth Dialogues. As you know, each month we bring you leadership insights from a wide range of guests, and today we are going to focus on our research program at the medical school. This summer, we were pleased to announce that Dr. Rick Kittles, one of the country's leading medical researchers, as the new Senior Vice President for Research. Dr. Kittles will work closely with our previous head of research, Dr. Sandra Harris Hooker, who is now our Senior Vice President for External Affairs and Innovation. Welcome to the Danforth Dialogues. Thank you, Dr. Harris Hooker and Dr. Kittles, for joining me today.
Thank you for having myself.
So I'm going to start with Dr. Harris Hooker. Dr. Harris Hooker, let's start by giving our audience an overview of our research program that you have headed for so many years, and I will not say for 99.
Thank you for that. Well, how long do we have? Because I certainly could take all of this time talking about our programs at Morehouse School of Medicine. We now have a very robust and comprehensive program. But if we think back, say, 30 to 40 years, we probably started with a portfolio that gave us about maybe $300,000 to $400,000 a year, is at best, is where we started. Because you guys know, we started as a two-year medical school, and I won't go through all of that history. But fast forward to now, it's just astonishing what we have accomplished. I'll jump right to this past fiscal year. We ended the past fiscal year, you guys, with well over $84 million in research and training support. We know that much of that may have had to do with what came forth from the pandemic. However, those applications still had to be submitted by a very aggressive research faculty. And let us not leave out the fact that there's the social justice piece that we took advantage of, and those that felt that they needed to let us know what was going on. Then I want to quickly say that just in the last 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, we have received three new R01 grants, a very broad global activity over in Zambia on HIV/AIDS for $46 million. That's for a consortium of black medical schools, in addition to Morehouse School of Medicine, Meharry Medical School, Charles Drew School of Medicine and Science, and Howard University School of Medicine. We're doing great work in making an impact in Zambia in terms of HIV/AIDS. And then we have a rural program led by one of our outstanding longtime leaders, Dr. Mary Langley, for $3 million. And then another very innovative genomics precision medicine program. That's in the last 3 weeks. And that one of those R1s was for $3 million, and that's precedent in terms of having an R1 at that. So what we're saying, Dr. Montgomery Rice, in answer to your question is, our research program has really grown over the years. And we intend for it not to go to just the next level, but two or three or four levels with Dr. Kittles coming on board. No pressure, Rick.
So speaking of Dr. Kittles, first of all, welcome to Morehouse School of Medicine. You've been on the ground now for how long?
About 8 weeks,
and I know you have hit the ground running. Why don't you share with the audience a little bit about your background and why you chose to come to Morehouse School of Medicine?
Well, thank you, Dr. Montgomery Rice. I'm very excited to be here and humbled, and I see sort of the history of the organization, and my vision and my experience all coming together. I started my career in about 2000. I finished my PhD in Washington, D.C., and got a faculty position at Howard University. And at the time, I was focused on genetics and genomics of complex traits and disease. But I was really focused on trying to understand disparities in the African-American population. Now, at the time, in 2000, there wasn't a lot of genetic studies in this space, looking at genetics of disease, and in particular, disparities related diseases. Very few data sets from people of African descent, and then also Hispanics. And so I had to sort of come up with these resources and new methodologies to manage those questions that we were asking. At the time at Howard, I was actively involved in developing the National Human Genome Center at Howard University, which is still standing, I'm excited to say, and has had a huge impact in the training of graduate students and postdocs in the space around genetics and genomics. At a historically black university. After leaving Howard, I went to several other institutions, had various titles, but my focus and my vision has always stayed the same. I developed as an African American geneticist. That's my identity, and my identity, while shaped at Howard University. Once I left and had other positions, the titles never impacted me. It was more so what my identity was as a scientist. And so going from Howard to Ohio to Chicago to Arizona and then more recently LA, I saw a very diverse landscape as it relates to research. And I was trying to always understand where does our community fit in? The bulk of my research, as I said, focused on African Americans. At the time, genetics. Now, what's emerged from genetics is a product called precision medicine, or many products called precision in the precision medicine space. And I think that, you know, we have to continue to explore in this space how genetics could help improve the health of our communities.
So I think it's important, guys, for our audiences to understand this continuum of research. So this question is sort of directed at both of you all. Because Dr. Harris-Hooker, you talked about community engaged or community participatory research.
Yes.
You talked about R01. And here Dr. Kittles is talking about genetics, and now he's talking about precision medicine. Mm-hmm. So imagine that I am trying to understand the full landscape of the research continuum at Morehouse School of Medicine. Mm-hmm. And equally important, the why do we need to be involved across that continuum? So maybe Dr. Harris-Hooker, you can tell us what that continuum looks like. And Dr. Kittles, you can tell us the why of that continuum and why it's so important for us, particularly in the communities that we're trying to serve.
So the continuum, you guys, most know it as what we call translational research. And that is research that starts at the bench, if you will. Some call that T0. And then we ask that crucial question at the bench, and the researchers pursue it. They take their answers and move it to what we call bedside, or clinical research, which may be T1 or T2. But we can't stop there because those findings need to be taken to the community, because that's when they really make a difference once they get to the community. That continuum we want to let you know is what Morehouse School of Medicine has coined as TX. And TX basically says that for us at Morehouse School of Medicine, you can't really put a number to it. So X is that exponential that says it's indefinite. It's not finite. It does not become finite until we've actually moved the needle on addressing whatever that healthcare issue is, be it diabetes, heart disease, or what have you. So let's not stop at 2, 3, or 4. And we see that because our communities, and I'm not going to jump into Dr. Kettle's answer, but we want to make sure that it's understood that it's not linear. It really has to be a circumference, yeah. Because we come right back around and another issue or question will come and we come back around again to the bench. And so translational research, TX for us, is keep moving until we've actually been able to make an impact and a difference in health.
And so the why of this, why is it important for an institution like Morehouse School of Medicine to be involved in all of the different aspects of this T journey, or this translational journey?
Well, it's I guess the question isn't necessarily why, it is how do we do it? It is our responsibility as individuals who come from these communities to go back and serve and provide insight that can improve the health of our communities. If you were to ask the average African American student that wants to do research, what type of research do you want to do? Most of them are going to say health disparities, health equity work, because that means something to us. So you know, we all understand that, you know, for the most part, when we go out and achieve these degrees and get in position to do research, we're going to give back to the community. Very few communities, very few investigators outside of our community can do that. Now, the funding sources historically have not paid attention to what's going on in our communities. And so historically, it's been the historically black colleges and universities that have provided that insight. And you think about the history and the legacy of Morehouse School of Medicine, that's one of the reasons why I'm excited to be here, to continue with that legacy. I love what Dr. Harris Hooker mentioned about the continuum. Mm-hmm. This translational continuum is critical. We see it as a network. We see it as collecting information, working with the community, collecting information, finding out what the issues are, going back to the lab or going back to the computer or wherever, and coming up with solutions, and then bringing that back to the community. And we do that in all the different spaces in research, whether it is public health, whether it's health administration, health services, whether it is biomedical research. We always bring it back to the community.
Now, Dr. Kittles, I heard you say something about people, community contributing. And we know that we have had challenges with our community participating in clinical trials or providing information, even if it's for just an observational study and they're given demographic information, to participate, to provide information that may not necessarily benefit them immediately, but maybe some research question that we won't have the answer to for 10 years from now.
Right.
How do we show the benefit to the community of why they should participate in clinical research, even if it doesn't provide them with direct benefit immediately?
If you look at the barriers to participation in clinical trials and the lack of equity in terms of benefit, A lot of it has to do with the fact that we do not want to participate in these studies. We see, our community sees clinical trials and research in particular their participation as being guinea pigs. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I say to them, I tell folks in the community outright, I said, look, you may see yourself as a guinea pig looking, or, you know, in this clinical trial, but you're going to be a guinea pig downstream once that drug is approved. And your community, your family, you as individuals have not participated in that discovery. And now you may as well be a guinea pig because you don't know what's going to happen in terms of your response. So I think we have to be more proactive. It is the challenge that researchers have to be able to, number one, articulate what we do to the, you know, to the common folk in the community and get them excited about it. Mm-hmm. Because with that excitement comes a level of wanting to participate. There's a level of advocacy. And then there's also a level of understanding that allows them to become ambassadors in the community. And so I tell my students all the time, you have to be able to articulate what you're doing in a way that the community understands and gets excited about it. You know, we're salesmen, you know, we're storytellers. And some of the best scientists are the best storytellers.
So Dr. Harrisuka, tell us a little bit about how we overcame some of the vaccine hesitancy during the COVID-19 pandemic when we were launching our clinical trials for the vaccines.
Yes, what we did, and I'm smiling because I always feel like it's the Morehouse School of Medicine way of doing things. You know, I'm a bit biased, but we made sure, much of what Dr. Kittles is saying is that we made certain, one, that the folks that are talking about them participating looks like them. You know, doesn't always have to be the case. But when you can sit and relate to someone about their fears, because you've heard it from your mother and grandmother and grandfather, so when the same thing that they heard about you, don't need to do that. We made sure, one, that we had persons in the technology and research assistant areas that looked like them. But as importantly, we educated them. We had our folks on the TV stations. When they would call for Dr. Rice to be there, she would say, no, I need to have Dr. So-and-so there, Ms. So-and-so there. Educating our folks in terms of what they should expect, why they should participate. So we've been doing that for a very long time. And what that has done is made us a very trusted partner in the community. Because, and that's why we had to be so careful about what we said during the time that we were doing this. Because we didn't want to sign on to something that would lose our trust with our folks in the community.
So trust in the community, but also expecting that people would participate. Because when we looked at COVID-19, mm-hmm. this virus was disproportionately impacting people of color. Yeah. Higher mortality, higher morbidity. Now, yes, there was a lot of racism going on. There were lots of structural barriers, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it wasn't because we were black people that we were right. necessarily disproportionately impacted. It was because we couldn't social distance. Right. We had more exposure. We had more opportunity for this virus to impact us. And we had higher burdens of disease.
That's right, comorbidities.
Comorbidities that would be negatively impacted by this virus. Which gets me to sort of my next conversation, Dr. Kittles, and that is, you've done a lot of groundbreaking research looking at the ancestry of African Americans through DNA. And we know that the human genome has been mapped. And we know from this human genome that there's this concept of precision medicine coming out. But because only about 2.4% of the human genome that is mapped is from African Americans, is it really going to be precise for us when this medicine comes out? Is it really going to be precise enough for us?
Well, I mean,
is that not how the genome works?
Well, I'm going to be frank with you. It's not ready for prime time at the moment. We still have a bit more work to do. But I can guarantee you this, as a geneticist, as a scientist, someone who understands the genome and the impact that it can have, if we were to increase that the data in the databases from people of African descent, it would have broad impact, not just for African Americans, but for everybody, because of the antiquity of the African genome, and from that, all other human populations emerge. So at the very when you think about the overall impact, it's going to have a huge impact in people of color. But it also will play a very strong role in helping to improve the health of non-African people. So the fascinating thing about precision medicine, though, is a lot of it is expensive. Mm-hmm. It's very costly. Mm-hmm. And so my biggest—
the immunotherapies and those type of things that we see for cancer drugs, et cetera, how they're able to look at the genetics of the tumor,
right,
and then have a drug that targets it directly.
That's right. I mean, that's where things are now. I mean, there actually are populations, communities, individuals, families that are benefiting from precision medicine right now. But if you look at the distribution of where the benefit is, it's not in our population, mm-hmm, because there's still work that has to be done, I think. The average person with a cancer can go to their oncologist and get their tumor sequenced, mm-hmm, and that information is just there's so much insight that comes from that profile, where they can say, okay, well, this particular drug is not going to work for this tumor because of these variants that this person has in the tumor. Mm-hmm. Oh, this drug will work better, and so the insight and the impact is great.
Mm-hmm. So that gets me, Dr. Harris-Hooker, to the importance of your new role, external affairs and innovation, because it's about partnerships. Because if you think about what Dr. Kittles is saying, mm-hmm, that we know that the technology and the scientific rigor exists for us to do the genetics of a tumor. And we know that if you look at cancers or if you look at other issues, that there's a disproportionate burden on communities of color, and we want to make sure that they would have access, mm-hmm, to those new therapies, or they would have access to participate in a phase 3 clinical trial that may be testing, right, one of those therapies. How do partnerships and innovation and external engagement, how does that work for Morehouse School of Medicine to be able to bring that opportunity to the community?
Well, at the Morehouse School of Medicine, we have always realized that we cannot accomplish all that you just listed and more in isolation. So we've always known that we must be about partnerships. And while we have a history of partnerships, really in the last, I'm going to say 5 to 6 years, it's just exploded, you guys. Our numbers of partners have just gone through the window. And while that's excellent, at the same time, we have to pause and say, how great is that if we really have not organized ourselves, if we don't systematize, mm-hmm, what happens there? And what we mean by that is we have to make certain that, all these folks are coming to us because they now know that the Morehouse School of Medicine, who we are, and the impact that we have and can have. But we have to pause and say, we're being inundated, to be truly honest with you guys. We're really being inundated by folks knocking at our door to be partners. So we have to make certain that we look and put a system in place that says, okay, does this request really align with the strategic plan of the Morehouse School of Medicine? Is this a partnership that's really going to help us to be able to do that whole task or address that list? How many of those might overlap with one another? So I actually envision this connectivity map.
Okay.
Looks like a network of neuronal kind of
neurons. Okay, synapses all over the place. Okay, yes. Okay.
Connectivity points. And so we will put into place a map or a system that if we want to ask a question about who's doing what in terms of sequencing, or if we want to ask a question about who's doing work in machine learning or artificial intelligence, any of those questions, or who really are training interns, will take students for internship, that we can touch that map and everybody that's doing that will light, okay? So we can know who we go to. And at the same time, we have to monitor that. So our unit or office will nurture our existing partners as well as those in the future. So we will be able to dictate how we use those partners to really get to what we need in terms of.
So Dr. Harris-Hooker, that is a very good visual map of where we are going. I think I was seeing the map of the United States and that AT&T, one of those commercials. With all the dots coming up, so that my people on the podcast just visualize that. But it is connectivity, yes, and ensuring that you're leveraging all of your assets. So Dr. Kittle, you see sort of the infrastructure that Dr. Harris-Hooker wants to ensure that's in place, mm-hmm, as you move our research program forward.
Right.
So 15 years from now, what would you like that research program to look like?
Wow. So first I have to say that inheriting the research enterprise, inheriting it at this stage, I think, has been really satisfying because
that was a good week last week with all
of
grants. That was a good week
very
for
good
you.
Week.
Yes.
And so you think about, you know, and Dr. Harris-Hooker mentioned it earlier, you know, the beginnings, you know, and now. And so this, we're on a trajectory, and I think this is a point of inflection for the research enterprise. And so what I would like to see and what I'm going to achieve is more transformational growth in the research enterprise space. You know, as we were talking, genetics, genomics, precision medicine is going to be key in this over the next 10 years.
Now, do you see it cross-cutting? Because
we got
great circadian rhythm research going on.
Right,
we got a bunch of research that goes on in neuroscience.
Right.
We're hoping that we see more Alzheimer's research and cardiovascular disease research. So are we just going to be a genomic institute?
No.
Okay, just checking.
We have spectacular research on the ground. We have major centers and institutes that have been quite successful in their research endeavors, not just getting grants, but providing information out there in the literature for researchers, and then also impacting the community. And I think about some of the community-facing institutes and programs at Morehouse School of Medicine. Those are going to be leveraged a lot more in the space of the delivery of clinical trials, the delivery of precision medicine products specific for our community. So yeah, genomics and precision medicine is going to be integrated throughout.
Cross-cutting
and integrated within all the centers. Now, like I said, the centers and the institutes by themselves have done a great job, but we're going to remove some of the silos and make it a network, just as Dr. Harris-Hooker was explaining. Because we all, you know, we feed off each other, mm-hmm, and it's a symbiotic relationship that makes the enterprise grow. Also, what I intend on helping to shepherd in is NCI designation for the Cancer Health Equity Institute. I see that over the next 5 years, mm-hmm, within the next 5 years. Also, you know, we if we're talking about this growth, if we're talking about hitting $300 million in research funding,
expenditures?
Either one.
Okay, just checking.
Okay, let's say expenditures. $300 million in expenditures. We have to shore up the research administrative piece, because you know you don't want to bring all of this in and then not have that infrastructure to handle it. So that's a big part of what my goals are. But I think probably the most important thing is investing in junior faculty and young investigators, because that is where the future is going to go. I mean, when you think about the state of the art, a lot of this science and technology is being driven by young folk right now, and we really need to nurture them and so that they understand that they have a place. They have a space here at Morehouse School of Medicine. We care about them, and we're going to make sure they're successful. And the community cares about them is going to be responsive. I mean, responsive to their work.
So, which leads me to our last area, which is the most important thing that we do at Morehouse School of Medicine, and that is who we educate and train. So, Dr. Harris-Hooker, give us just a little bit of background of our major grant that we have that helps us educate and train these wonderful biomedical scientists, and then have you and Dr. Kittleson, we'll end with you talking about really the future of how you see in us leveraging the great work we've done, but how we put who we educate and train on steroids. So Dr. Harris, give us a little background about our major grant that we have that supports our training of biomedical scientists.
Well, this is a grant that comes out of the National Institutes of Health by way of the National Institute on General Medical Sciences. And it supports it's a major supporter of our graduate students. And that we've had, probably 20 plus years now. It's changed names over the years, but it's been primarily that award. And so we've taken that, and that's been our base, but actually we've built off of that. And we now reach out to many of our partners, whether it's a Novartis or a Genentech or a Biogen, and all of those partners. Not only do we come to them and partner in terms of research programs, we always point out to them that we want to know about training. We want them to support internships. We want them to come to our institutions and see our students at work, and then they go to them for internships, and also for their careers, you guys. We have placed many students into the marketplace, into the workforce, by training them at the Morehouse School of Medicine and then sending them out into the workforce. So we are going to continue that. That will be a part of partnership and innovation, which is the other part of my office. I know you didn't ask this question, but that's going to be the...
Go ahead.
That's where the intersection will take place between partnership and innovation. And while the world is doing innovation, you guys, you know, we're not coming up with that. But ours is going to be different because we're going to innovate the Morehouse School of Medicine way. So we're not going to innovate for the sake of innovation. We're going to innovate with it all leading to eliminating health inequities when we do our innovation. So if you're not talking about doing that with us, then we're not going to be innovating with you, because we make sure that ours is done differently.
Right. And Dr. Kittles, your take on how we leverage our current assets and grow more so that we are ensuring that we are educating and training this next generation of biomedical scientists that are going to help us eliminate health disparities.
Right. So, you know, let's just be straight. Our primary mission is to educate young folk, and research and the research operation can help in that endeavor. And in fact, it can help greatly, because it will prepare them to be future researchers, future physician scientists. And having a very strong research portfolio allows you to you can galvanize the education around that. One of the reasons why I mentioned an investment in junior faculty is because many of them like to get students. They like to bring them into the lab. I think that given our numbers, we may not necessarily be able to find a slot for every student on campus in the laboratory. but our partners. And that's why I love what Dr. Harris Hooker has been doing and continues to do, because our partners are going to help shore that up. But I would love to see the research operation grow where the majority of our students can do their master's thesis, their PhD thesis, in-house.
Well, great, great. So as you can see, we have two great leaders. And as we pass this torch, I think, from one individual who has not been here 99 years, but about 30 what?
I think it's 35.
35 years, leading our research enterprise in one way or another, always being ever present. So excited that she chose to take on this new role, because her background aligns so well with us being able to create new partnerships, leverage existing ones, and bring innovation that is focused on eliminating health inequities. So if you're not interested in eliminating health inequities, don't knock on our door. Okay, you heard that. And then passing the torch to our newest leader, who comes to us with an eye on the prize. And the eye on the prize, to me, is that we're not only trying to eliminate health inequities for Black and brown people, we're using the foundation of the African American ancestry. The DNA was hidden in there to help not just with Black and brown people, but with all people. And we're going to see all boats to rise. So thank you, Dr. Kittles, for joining us. I think we are pretty much out of time today, and so we're not going to take any questions from the audience. And so I will close. On behalf of Morehouse School of Medicine, I want to thank you both for joining us today to talk about our research program and really our future. And we are honored to have the two of you, two of the greatest leaders, I believe, in healthcare research on this program. It is appropriate that we close with three final thoughts, but really talk about what we believe great leadership is in medical research. First, great leadership in research always begins and ends with science. We follow the science. As we have experienced what happened with us in COVID-19 and that pandemic, what we know is it was the leadership of the Morehouse School of Medicine, and in partnership with the leadership in the Atlanta University Center, that kept our infection rates to under 2% for our student population and our employee population. We followed the science, and we have learned from the science. And so it began with the pandemic, and we're going to end this pandemic with science. Second, great leadership and research understands that the goal is to create better health for all. So while we at Morehouse School of Medicine focus on Black and brown and underserved communities, it is because that is where the gap is. And we see our role as filling the gap. But we understand that when we develop breakthrough medical advances or scientific outcomes, that all individuals are going to benefit from those breakthroughs. And we will ensure the dissemination in an equitable manner for those results to impact all. And finally, great leadership and research knows that the quest never ends. We must continue to look for answers, even if they are not for the problems we face today. We know that when you're in the discovery mode, you will find solutions to problems that may not have shown themselves yet. And that is why we have extensive data sets and opportunities of knowledge held that we can integrate to solve for those problems that have yet to show themselves. With that, we end today's Danforth Dialogue. Thank you for tuning in, and always we wish you good health, great success, and all you do. Thank you for joining me today.
This has been a presentation of Danforth Dialogues with Morehouse School of Medicine CEO, Dr. Valerie Montgomery Rice. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. For more information, please contact us at danforthdialogues@msm.edu.